Let's begin. Second week of functional programming. Hands up if you speak only English. So no English speakers present. And well, there's no, I have no idea if the English speaking people are actually watching the lecture videos. So let's do it like this. If I don't get an email after publishing the lecture videos, the rest of the course will be in Finnish. So we'll find out if there actually are people who are, doing this in English. So, let's get started. The topic for today, I can actually even show you where you can find the topic nowadays, since we have a web page, is applicative functors. Very abstract topic. It's something that you use in modern Haskell code. It's almost all things are applicative functors. Most of them are. I/O, for example, maybes, all of these things. And they have lots of this supporting machinery around them that makes them really powerful. Here's my table from, so we are in week two here. And if you are completing this course partially, means that you survive this week and you get one credit already. It's half done, so don't miss that. Also, if you find that my grading and deadline here are too tight and you have some other reason why you can't manage speaking, let me know and I will fix some additional way of passing this. So let's not put too much on this. So applicative functors are all functors. They are kind of like if normal functor was a map, you could take a structure and modify the stuff inside the structure. That's what XMap does in practice. Applicative functors then are things that take two structures and somehow merge two structures. And this is a rather abstract concept. For example, we can take a simplest applicative. Let's have an editor and a GHI at the same time. So simplest applicative functor, well, it's something like this. Well, let's take a maybe, for example. Maybe A. So maybe is an applicative functor because it has this kind of a nice function. Has multiple names. I'm using C++B. This is one way of forming applicative functors. Let's say C++B maybe, so I don't have to use type parameters to show you this. And now it works. It takes a maybe A, maybe B, and returns you maybe A B. Right. Then this is obvious, right? It's very nice property of two maybe values is that if I have two of them, I can clone them together. So basically, what are the two possible ways how a function of this type can behave? There's basically essentially two different behaviors that you can have for this. One is that this is always nothing. The result value is always nothing. It never does anything else, which is a silly definition. The other definition, well, is that if either of these values is nothing, then the result is nothing. But if you have both of them as just the value, then the result is just pair of the values. Right. And this is the structure that we are going to be toying with. This is what we are going to do. And, well, its underlying power doesn't really come up with the main business. Maybe think this is probably very simple for you. Everyone is clear, and I know if you are somewhat clear, yeah, what this does. So it doesn't seem like that powerful concept. Before we pick up stuff that is subfamily functors, things like parsers and something that has behavior embedded in them. So we first show a few examples of these polygon functors, and then show how applicative functors actually make life easier when we have those things. And then we might do some helper functions, auxiliary functions, and figure out why the applicative instance, even for many pieces, is a great thing to have. So let's start with this in a minute. But now that everyone is here, first one administrative question. First week's exercises. Any questions about those?
Will GADTs be covered later on in Monday?
GADTs.
Yeah.
If you want, yeah, I can do those.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, but it's quite a bit of
work. Yeah,
there was enough information.
Yeah, send me an email so I can remember, or actually I can make a note. No. GADTs are now part of the course. Okay. Anything else? Mostly about the exercises. Is anyone totally stuck with them? Anyone who's feeling that they were insurmountable? Because the feeling that you should have when doing those exercises is that they are either trivial or you're feeling like you are bending an iron bar with your bare hands. The latter feeling is the one that you want. It's kind of things like you should feel a bit of desperation when doing this, and it's perfectly normal. You ask questions, you do them once or twice, and then the iron bar starts to flex. And this is pretty much guaranteed. It feels hard at the beginning, but gets very easy when you do it a few times. So don't worry if it feels extraordinarily hard, because it's extraordinarily hard before you have done it once. Okay, anything more about that? No. So, let's pick up a funny functor. This is the thing that we did in a huge hurry last time. So basically I just typed code and other random words in this code. So let's actually see what we are doing. And what is our problem that we are solving here? This is one example problem. Is the idea that we want to model random processes in computers. So for example, we have a computer game, and there is an enemy that behaves in a random way. You play it once, it goes up, you play it second time, it might go left, and things like this. Or you might make a simulation. You might want to throw dice, play poker, shuffle card decks, things like this. And this is a bit hard, since computers really don't do fast, real, random numbers very well. So instead of having random numbers that are truly random, that no one can guess, you usually have this sequence of numbers that is produced, like in the simplest most case, like this. You have this A times X previews plus C. And then you figure out nice numbers, which are usually large primes or large combinations of primes. And then you take some initial value, you feed it one number, and it produces you another number, which seemingly has nothing to do with the number that you fed in. So this is basically just an unpredictable equation. So without knowing the actual values, it's pretty hard to figure out what the next number is going to be. So it gives an illusion of randomness. Obviously, when you see the equation, you sample a few numbers, you can actually compute these things from there. And if you make a casino game or actually start giving out money based on essentially guessing what the next number is going to be, this will really suck. It will make you a very poor man. So, why am I taking random numbers here? Random numbers are special case of thing called a state monad, which is the absolutely most difficult thing in this course, historically has been. It's actually very easy, but the iron bar takes a few bendings before it starts to flex. So, I have this function. Let me demonstrate how to call it, so everyone is with me. So I have linear congruential generator function. I give it initial random number. And it gives me another funny number. Idea is obviously that I use that number, I convert that into a sublings of a guard gecko, whatever. And then when I need the next number, I just take this previous number and feed it back to the equation, get a new number. And I get sequence of numbers that seemingly have no predictable behavior. Now, obviously the point here is that if I want to simulate something realistic, I have this random number thingy that makes me 32-bit integers. The big business is, how can I actually take this thing and convert it to something else? I probably never want a 32-bit integer, pretty useless thing as itself. What I want is a random element of deck of cards. So random card from a deck of, or a plain deck, or a dice roll. So I want to roll a dice so I don't get number between 1 and 6. So for this reason, it's nice that this thing is actually a functor. So what we do is we make another new type which contains this kind of function. This function is basically just this thing here. So this is a wrapper for functions like this, except that we have this idea that we don't want the 32-bit integer, we want something else. But we also need the 32-bit integer to feed back into this function, right? So we have this A here. And you can think the A is some kind of a projection of this 32-bit integer. So you have some way of deriving a, let's say, dice roll from the 32-bit thing. And since we want to be able to do multiple of these things, we put it inside a type parameter for the random. So basically this just wraps this kind of function. And the big idea, well, we need a new type because functions are already functors in one way, so we like to define another way. And then we have the functor instance, which is not actually really that hard thing to do. It has one part that is difficult initially when you see it. So I need to produce a value of this type. So I have some value of that type and some f that I need to apply change that part here. So yeah, this a. I must apply this A to that A. Only problem is that this A actually doesn't exist inside this statement here. It isn't there. It's the result of a function that is inside here. So what we do is we build up a new random thingy. The first parameter of the random thingy, or first value that it contains, has to be a function like this. So how do we get a function like this? Well, we make a function like this. One way to do it is to use an anonymous lambda function, which takes this seed here and maps it into blah, 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 this. And what is the body of the lambda function? There is this function inside the original random, this one here. We feed it the seed, which is a seed given to the new random thing that we are building up. Then pattern match the result, and we get the result, which is the A, and the seed one, which is the word 32. And then we have all the parts that we need, and we just reassemble them together in this new pair. Then we have applied F to the result of the original random function. And then we return, the original, the seed that the original one returned. Right, easy, up to this point. So, then we can make a few instances of this random value. Easiest is, of course, this one. This is the primitive that we are going to use to build everything else. And random, I need a function that takes some kind of seed, produces some kind of value, this is going to be pair of 32 bit integer and pair of 32 bit integer. And how do I get that? Well, I have this linear congruence of generator. I just use that. And I get something like this. My spelling is really bad. Okay. So we have first something like this. Then we make use of the functoriality. Let's implement a children's dice game. You know, this game is called Beaded, and it's a very simple game. You roll two dice, and you order them in order you like. You get 3 and 6, and you put 6 first and 3 after that, and you get 63. And then the other guy rolls two dice, and sees if he can make a bigger number. And this is actually a really nice game if you are, you know, 3 years old. But it's also very fast to program here, so let's do that. So, first is, I need a die roll. And well, this is again going to be something that don't do this if you're actually running a casino or doing anything real with a random number, because I'm going to do it very badly. So, die. Random int. So, something like this. And let's make it like this. We have this 32-bit word. That's a random thing. And then we edge map it using some operation. Take the remainder after division by 6. Okay. Then let's. Yeah, doesn't work. I'm promising the user an int, but this is 32 bit word. Not very well done. So, luckily, integers are easy to convert from one form to the other. Now I have a die. I'm going to roll a die. One awesome point available, extra awesome point, if you can tell me now or after the lecture why this is going, this is a very bad idea. Well, basically I'm going to give you an answer so after the lecture doesn't come. So why is this going to give me, you know, something that can be possibly abused by, this was an online casino, someone would want to abuse it. Why is this something that can be abused? It's very important if you're working with random numbers.
Yeah. Just have a very short period.
One thing is that my generator is going to be like it has. It's like a generator, so it's probably going to start repeating itself at some point. Not actually the difficulty that I was looking at. The difficulty is in these parentheses. The idea is, of course, that if I divide by 6 and take the remainder, the problem is that the maximum value of 32-bit int is not divisible by 6. So there's going to be an overlap. Some small numbers, like 1 and 2, are going to be more likely than number 6. But this is a, you know, very small effect because my range is small and 32-bit integers are weak.
Yeah, but with enough price, it will show up as a statistical error.
Yeah, if you play long enough, it will kind of screw you. If you are doing simulations, this will screw you. So, right way would be, you know, to re-roll until you get in the proper range and do stuff like that. But that's some other cause. Probably mathematics. The building is going to be one where you find that. So we have a die. And what can we do with the die? Well, let's make this deprand function. which is just, you know, your run of the mill extraction function. Picks up the initial seed, some random computation, and evaluates the random computation. Just so we can see how these things work. So step rank, initial seed, and title. Yeah, got a 6. A very nice sign for my random number generator is fun. Roll it again. Yeah, gives me random titles. Okay, next. If I want to roll 2 dice, let's make the part where you roll 2 dice and see which is the biggest number that you can make out of 2 dice roll titles. Now the problem is that I can't really do the fmap. I mean, fmap gives me only one random thing ever. I would somehow need 2 of these random things. So, what can I do? Well, I can just go and hard code the whole thing. And let's make it. Yeah, let's use the random framework. This random thing here, it's for this way of programming this thing, it's not really that useful. But let's keep it since it's less things to edit that with in the real way. So, roll 1, seed 1 is equals to here is another way of writing code like this. So it's a random, some function with some parameters is looking like this. And if I want this to be actually the random thing, well, I return. Well, what do I return? I have to arrange the dice so they make the maximum number. So, this is one way of programming that, convert to string, proper read and back. Probably much more nicer results. Nicer ways to do this, but works for us. Yeah. This is my game round. It gives me more errors. Yeah. Basically just remember what you call things and it's going to be better. And remember to convert everything to strings. Yes, exactly. I use the same seed for both of them, so it's not going to advance the state of the random number generator. Okay, silly me. Happens all the time when you are absent minus lightning. Okay, cool. I have the game wrong. play game. Let's make a another stupid function. You play the game automatically. You don't have to pick up the dice. Press enter and you see who won. So let's make it like this. So I give it two strings, the names of the players, and then I, give a random string. And again, I have to do this thing twice. So I can use my functor mechanism to do that. So I get, this probably some, syndrome in my hands because of the huge number of amount of typing. And where ops lead to positive. Result 1, seed 1 equals to step random original seed, and then so this is the first round result, and then we have this, and what we compute with this, if first we get the value out of this, what is the probable value, if result 1 is greater or equal than result 2, then P1 tells player 2. Okay, this is probably unfair for the player 2, but let's not care about that. Player 1 is the casino, so it has to get some payoff from actually implementing a game like this. And then I got that. And this is probably my least I think faster than I type. I thought through it, but didn't type it all. See how I make all the identical mistakes when I write things like this. Initial seed. Pause.
I dealt it already.
At this point, I'm starting to get really angry. Okay, what? That would have given me infinite recursion. Okay. And where's my initial value? Yeah, I like it more already. Yeah, I've been at least a few times. Okay, great. So, what's the problem here? It's if I was trying to make a living out of making computer programs, this wouldn't probably be so nice, right? It takes me a lot of typing, and it's really awkward. I make all the same mistakes again and again and again. And the idea is that one way of thinking about applicative functors is that you have things like this game around. You want an efficient way of computing things like this. And applicative is a standard pattern that you fit on top of that to make it easy to program. It's nothing more, it's just a pattern. So let's make a new class, which is not the real applicative functor class, but it's something that is simpler. It's easier to see what is happening using this class. This class will be harder to use than the actual applicative functor, but it's identically the same thing. You can make a function to convert from one to another, so you don't lose anything by doing that. So we have class chipA has two functions. SetUnit, which is basically way of giving me f with an entry there. Alternatively, this is what sums of refers, and I kind of like it. taste more. Also, in some discussion that we, which we are going to use, we need, you know, these are obviously not equal. These, if I have that and that, they are not of the same expressive power. These actually, you know, does pretty much nothing. And this takes an A and makes a random A, for example. So we need a constraint. Why we are calling them applicative functors is because if you have an applicative, it's always going to be a functor. Or if you are doing it via this chip A thing, you need this chip A to be a functor, or the F to be a functor, so you can implement this stuff. So in case F is a functor, then the class chip A has these two functions. So replace mentally the F with random, and you probably can catch why this would be a nice thing to have. So before doing the random, let's take the easiest, most trivial of chip A's there is. Good question. Just to check if how lazy summer you have had after the functional programming one. Do I need to write maybe or maybe A? Yeah. You know, everyone in favor of maybe A? And so on. Okay. Everyone in favor of just writing maybe? Okay, cool, and if you actually didn't show your hand, I don't think, you know, half of you didn't show hands. So I think this is not actually trivial. So how do you find out? How do you figure out if you want the A or not? In this case, having an A here is not the correct answer. You can't put an A here. And reload. The trick is that, you know, we check the kinds of these things. Kinds are types of types. So the type of a type is called a kind. And the idea is that I can make this kind of a query in GHI, meaning says kind maybe A. And it says that it's from star to star, meaning it maps one type into another type. Meaning equally you have, you know, okay, it's almost like function sort which increments a value by one. No, it takes something and gives you the something back. Here it takes one byte and gives you another byte back. So for example, if I have maybe int, that's kind star, that is a type. Maybe is a type function that, you know, takes a type and returns another type. So it maps this int into, you know, maybe int. So maybe int is this star here, and the int is this. Kind of like this. Okay, so this is how you find out what the kind of thing is. It also works for things like type classes, especially this chip A that I have defined. And now you, at this point, you just, you know, forget all about the difference between types and values. At this point, we are, you know, talking of types and types of types, which is basically the same thing. And chip A is a thing that takes a type constructor, thing like maybe, and it returns me a constraint. Constraint, constraint is what you write on left of the back arrow. So, for example, if I have chip A, maybe I have a constraint. If I would type like this, then this maybe it would be star instead of star, arrow, star. So it wouldn't work. Okay, this is how you figure it out which you have to write. Useful if there is many. Okay, back to this. Questions about that? Yes?
If you put maybe in, does it give you the kind of like star to constraint?
mean, this gives you a point error. So yeah, you can put a star in place of a star or a star. Like function. Okay, back to this one. Let's make the unit. I need, what do I need? I need maybe containing this unit type. I can write nothing. Oh, that's the, you know, lazy answer. Works, gives you a nice applicative functor, that's totally useless, by the way. But we can have just unit. That's why you need this one, it's going to be apparent a bit later, so don't worry about it yet. Then we make the chip. So when you write these, it's very, you know, important to actually write the types also, because these are very hard to see, especially if this is the first time that you're learning it. These are very hard to see, but if you have the type handy, it becomes much easier. So chip NA and B. So I have two maybes, and you know, I want a pair of things. And I don't want to just return nothing because that would be a silly answer. Except that if first of these maybes, if this one is nothing, I can return that because I don't have the A in the pair. So it's going to be nothing. And if I have just X, there was X inside first maybe, then I can, oh well, let's write two cases, it's clearer that way. Check if there's anything inside MB, and if there's value Y inside of MB, then. Yep, that's right. You know, bit ugly to write. The last case you can write with fmap, it's easier that way. But let's do it like this. Here's my maybe version of this type class. It's also not that useful, but let's apply the same idea to this game around thing. Let's first use that. If we would have this kind of a, you know, a chip function at our hand, then this function would actually be let's do it in a different order. Let's write the, you know, instance first, so I can show you the types. Otherwise, I can show you just the type error, and you will see enough of them already during this course. Here. Let's make this instance. Chip A random. The jet unit is, well, random. How did I define this? It was a function. It was a function from, you know, seed to some value in another seed. Well, always when you have this unit or pure or return, this functioning like that, you want the simplest thing, but which is not the trivial thing. So you take some seed, return the unit value, and return the same seed. So you have this basically like, you know, constant function. Except that randoms have to carry around the seed value, so they can thread one random number generator call after the another. So we just, you know, take a function, put the return value in the proper place, done. Then this this nasty, nasty chip function. We get random one, random two, and then we want chip, then we get random sum of. And where the of is basically it's exactly what I wrote before, getting to dice rolls. So let's see how many mistakes. I copy paste, so indentation broke. I need to find it. Okay, cool. How does this help me with the game around? Well, obviously, this thing is going to go away, most part. Let's do okay, if I have this expression here, what is the type of this thing? If you know what the type of this thing is, raise your hand, I'm not going to ask you. Two people, let me. Okay. So how do I find out? Take pen and paper and you have the procedure from the first course. Or you can just go in and, look at this definition. I have chip. Okay. F equals random. And A, I am chipping two of these die functions. So, A is a random, too far. A in the above type, that's going to be an int. So B, that's going to be an int. So that means that if I say chip, die, die, I get random int, int. Right. Not really a rocket science thing. But remember that when you are doing this for the first time, it kind of requires you to use your brain much more than it will require after a few weeks. So this will feel hard, but it's really not. It will feel hard for the first time or first two times. So, game run. I will need that part later on. That I won't need. I have, this thing to annotate. I have, random pair of each, random variables, two in a pair. And now I don't want that. I want just a single random number which is ordering these two ints in the proper order. So, how can I do that? How can I take this pair of ints inside the random and then modify some? Well, now there is one random structure, so I can just take fmap and go inside and modify things. Things inside this big creature, which is random int, are the die rolls, so that's it. And this allows me to write the code. So, that's easy, right? That's very easy. Well, there's no part that I can really do a big mistake with. The parts that are essentially the nasty bookkeeping stuff that I got wrong, both two times were actually accidents, they were not planned. This is written once, so I have to debug it once. And now I can just reuse it again and again, and I can actually make this difficult to debug errors in my random processes. Because I can actually make a mistake like this in a big casino game, and no one will ever know. It's just going to give you bad answers, and then I get into legal trouble with someone or something. Bad place to make a mistake in. So yeah, play game. Let's implement it so easy. And I got a pass error here. I'm not passing the seed around anymore. This is the first example of applicative functors, and the agenda is that I'm going to spend the next lecture of today making more applicative functors. I'm going to make lots more of these and show you the general pattern. Actually, you can see the general pattern, which we are going to discuss probably during the next lecture, I guess. I'm going to be so slow that I can't make it today. Is that you can, you know, see kind of this thing that, you know, I first chip something together, then I use fmap to, you know, crush my pair in the value that I want. And then I get in here, I chip two things together, get one random value, then fmap over it, crush the pair of two things with the result I actually want. This is the part that you actually want to memorize, that's the important part. But okay, let's take a 10-minute break. So, okay, continuing. Excellent question is, do I see or recognize monoids, functors, and so on when I make bigger programs? Yeah, you get touch for that. You start recognizing these concepts in your code. Okay, so, what we have here is, well, the important parts of the previous, or one of the important parts. This new type random, this is one that is actually, you need to, you know, pay attention to this, I think. Because this is a functor, it's trivially a functor, it's a useful functor. I just showed you how to, you know, write much less code using this. But it's kind of a, you know, it's not your run of the mill functor from functional programming one. Because if I open the, you know, this program in a debugger and just actually look at memory of the computer and see what is inside this random A, there is no A in the computer memory. It's not a container. It's not like a maybe or a list which actually contains elements that are A. It is just a, you know, it's a function that you evaluate and at some point it's going to spit out an A. And all the interesting stuff is something like this. Almost everything that is interesting is a bit like that. So let's make another example. This is a bit more far-fetched, just to show you what this can be. And then we make a bigger example. And again, I reset. Any questions of the previous? Any other comments or questions before I step into the next topic? No. Was it difficult? Yeah, maybe. Well, it's quite difficult for the first time. Second time it's no bit difficult, and third time it's trivial. So, what other things do I have? This is kind of a, you know, it's a wrapper for function. It's somehow, you know, adding context to this function. I have some value A here, except that it's not a value A, it's a recipe for generating a value of type A. Similarly, if I take a simpler example, let's call this charts. You know, naming is hard. I have to pick one letter, variable name, and things like 15 seconds, which is nice. Okay, writer. Writer is another functor, which is something that you are not actually allowed to use in a real-world code. Turns out that this thing will have, you know, horrible cost semantics. It's going to be very slow if you use it. But as an example, it's very nice because it's so simple. It's kind of like, you know, these are, you know, quite simple. Right. You know, I have this A, and then there is some context with the A. So if I have value A, it's like int, it's 42, something like this. If I have writer XA, so let's say X string int, and I get semantically same values int here, 42, and I get something extra, additional information by an output. Let's say, answer to the universe and everything. Yeah, that's an X. So writers are, you know, results of functions that actually output more than one thing. You have, you know, made functions that return tuples, I guess. Probably, maybe. And this thing is used to annotate functions. So I can, you know, besides the ordinary value, I can give you a reason for the ordinary value. So it adds something to this value. I can have, let's say, example writer. Basically, this is Haskell speed implementing logging in a program, for example. And this is obviously a functor. You can just go in and change the A. And since I'm lazy, I'm going to, you know, make use of the this language extension, which is, by the way, not a valid way of completing the exercises for the last week. And it allows me to just derive the functor instance. Turns out that there is, you know, only one functor instance that actually reasonable ever, so it will give you that. So, allows me to add additional information to the result of my computations. So, what would I compute? Let's make a simple language, for example. I'm making a computer program to, you know, evaluate calculator commands or simple mathematical equations. I can plus two expressions together, I can multiply, and then have iterals and so on. For example, I could use this table type to encode expressions like this. Yeah, might be useful sometimes. Exercises finding out the way to write this in nice ways. For example, you have some fixed, financial software where your, analyst is going to give you equations, he's going to type them into a box in a way, and it's going to run simulations for you. And, you know, here's a simple one. Probably you can do many interesting expressions with just plus, multiply, and, you know, constant input. Simple idea. So, compute. it's going to be a function that just computes the value of a given expression. I'm slightly afraid that I'm going to make too difficult example of this, but let's see how I can manage. So, meaning of plus AB is that I compute A and compute B and then. Here is a really simple, you know, specific language for you. So, what I can do? I can compute the value of the example expression. So, what we have is, so, okay, at this point, sanity check. Raise your hand if you know at all what I'm talking about, why I would have something like this. I mean, otherwise it's going to be a very useless lecture if everything is going to. So, suppose I'm writing a web app. Looks like. It's some equation here, like 1 plus 1 times 2. And then I'm supposed to implement a program that computes the value of this expression. Okay. This could be more complex expression, more custom commands. You know, we could have function definition, whatever, to make a big, you know, domain-specific language. This is a simple one. And the big problems here is that, you know, I have to compute. This is a string. I have to convert this into number 4. First step is, for me, that I'm omitting here right now, is to make a data type to reflect this expression. Basically, if I draw it out, it's going to be this kind of a tree. Trees are nice because I don't have to figure out what's the associativity of the operators and so on. So I first take this string here, build this structure. So this is the data type that holds these structures. And this is the string that I'm, you know, manually converting into this form. So this is manual right now. I did this by hand. We try to do this, perhaps not this specific example, something simple during this lecture to pick up the other end. And what we are now doing is, you know, this computation, which then takes this structure and produces a number from that. Okay, cool. Are we on the same? Okay, and here I have written these things. Is this clear? How I actually managed to do this. It's a very trivial function, you pattern match which node I have and then compute. Just associate meaning to this data. Any questions, any troubles with this? Because this is the easiest starting point where it's going to go to a difficult direction.
Did you define the literal somewhere or
is it there?
Okay.
Anything else? Okay, try this at home. It's a fun exercise to do. And now I have it. It actually works. I have these expressions. If I have an assistant that is going to, you know, convert strings into these, then I can just compute. Now, let's make this more difficult for us. Let's make additional requirement. This is a you know, children's educational software, or it's a financial instrument that the user just needs rationale behind this. So let's add stuff. Let's add reason why here. Tell the user why is it form. Why do you get form from this? Suppose you have a small child that is learning to do math, then this would be really useful. It's four. Why is it form? And because 1 + 1 = 2, yeah, 2, and 2 × 2 = 4. And you can basically check your thinking with it. So how do I do this? Yeah, this turns out to be one of those nasty things. So the output is probably going to be this writer, right? That's something that I could use. So I would like it to be writer. First approximation, let's use strings as the explanation. Probably won't be very user friendly after I'm done with it. And the result is neat. And let's start here. I have literal x. Now I need to return this writer structure. And probably I don't have to explain anyone why number 2 is number 2. Or explaining this would be at least quite a difficult task. So let's omit that. Then, okay. Right. Now I'm in beta mode here. Seems, I would like to write something like let's make it nicer. I would like to write this. Oh, that's what I want. I have my reason and then I compute. Why doesn't this work? What's the problem here? What is the type of the compute? This is not going to return me an int. But, here I have to have a W string and an int. But this is not an int, and this is not an int. Because compute is returning writer string int. Oh, that's not nice. I can't even multiply these together because, they are not compatible. So I'm going to have lots and lots of code. Let's use another way of writing stuff like this. Actually, writer doesn't need any type, just plain double would work nicely, but since that's usually the hard part that it goes, so I need to do that. Now I can even make a better screen, actually. Roughly with me. So what I needed to do to be able to provide user the explanation, I have this function that is evaluating stuff. It is nice function, clean, easy to read, it's getting harder to read all the time. You can guess where this is when they end up. Now I have to pattern match, I have to pick up this writer, take the pieces out of it and somehow reasonably combine them. Okay, let's actually make this a list of strings. There's many multiple steps, so let's record all the steps. This is one step. Let's give it a name so it can make it easier. And yeah, then we probably want. And again, I seem to be today gravitating towards code that you shouldn't actually write in a real life. You know, appending to the end of list is very bad at the Haskell. If we have time, we will solve that once and for all at some point. But since the writer itself is very slow, then the whole code can be horrible and you don't have to care. It's just an example. Yeah, and now what we have for the multiplication. That's hideous. That's horrible code. I have to, you know, compute A, then pattern match, get the explanation text out from the, you know, from result of the compute the second thing, get the explanation and the result, then multiply the results together, then build up a new big explanation. Similar pattern to random. This, you know, 90% of this is now bookkeeping. It's just, you know, doing the same thing again and again and again. Stupid. Let's implement plus. Yeah, see my difficulty here. It's just copy-paste coding. It's horrible copy-paste coding. And we have plenty of errors. Let's start with the first one. How many? Oh my god. Really? This probably is the... This might explain it. I have... Let's make it into a proper data type. Basically, I don't want to do a tuple. Let's make it a data instead of this type. Yeah. Then it complains that I can't use a empty string here. Of course, since I decided I have list of explanations, I can't actually do that. Thank you, compiler. And yeah. Then at this point, I remember that this was tuple, but not two lines of code. Probably a good lesson to learn. You know, if you're going to copy paste code, compile before copy pasting. And yeah, the result is an int, so I have to convert to string. Oh boy, this is nasty. This is actually a fundamental problem in my code. Because, you know, oh wait. No, it's not. Just got confused about the last thing. Does what it says on the thing. You know, suppose I would have, let's say, 10 constructors here, you know, 10 different mathematical operations. You know, my paycheck is not enough for me to write that. So what can we do with this? This is like I'm repeating and repeating and repeating, and it's horrible. Chances of me getting this correct for 10 times is practically zero. So how do we fix this? Well, you see the pattern, right? Again, I'm having two structures. I'm having compute A, which is a writer. It's a value inside of writer. I have compute B, it's a writer. It's a value inside of writer. And I'm, you know, taking these two writers and, you know, merging them. I'm putting them together. And I'm doing it explicitly all the time. So actually, it turns out that if I make a applicative functor instance for the writer, it's going to be really nice. Because, again, lots of code is going to go away. So, let's make this. Set unit again. I think this X can't be arbitrary. Let's use monolith because otherwise we are going to get in trouble here. Because we want an empty element, we want the empty text there. But since this is an X and not a string, I can make an empty. I can't choose what I'm outputting as the annotation. Probably I'm not interested in strings. I would like to write HTML or whatever. It's a web app. And so if I ask X to be a monolith, things are much easier. And then, important part, always do this. Always make I mean, if you don't write this type, you will get confused, I promise you. So you have to have the type in order to be able to think. And guess how I'm going to get this code? Explanation, I'm not going to be able to just make a string out of it. I'm going to, you know, use my monoid instance. This is how I can take two explanations and form them together. The result itself, well, that's not interesting. It's just press A, press B, and, well, actually I'm calling them press 1 and press 2. Right. Here's my tippy thing for this. Okay, let's see if it compiles. Does it compile? No, because I lacking definition of monoids. Now I have much more power. I have tip in my arsenal. And all the bad, nasty code goes away. And again, pattern is always fmap something, zip something, something. Fmap, no. Let's write like this so we have something to discuss. It's very hard, at least for me, to type and think at the same time. And 30, let's forget about this for a while. Just let's be. Because this is going to lead to the next topic is going to be ending as well here. Okay, right, now I have something that is actually very nice to write. And let's do the same thing here. Okay, little one. This is the use for the F unit. So I'm going to make this in a cryptic way, just to demonstrate. So Z unit is going to give me a writer, and this F map is going to go in and replace the unit with the value X. And at this point, you know, it's quite nice. Quite nice. It's, again, exact same pattern. F map something, zip something. Ankari, you remember this was the horrible exercise that you had to do in functional programming 1. It makes a two-parameter function into a single-parameter function, takes it down. Okay. I have this kind of thing. Now, only problem is that I have to, you know, add the explanation there. I have to, you know, somehow figure out how do I explain this. Okay, at this point, we don't know how to do that. To do that, we probably need some more stronger things. Let's make it as it's made. Let's do it in a simple way. So, I can make a generic function, I can make a simple function. Wait, I have a slight problem with this. And I'm running over time, which means that you can I think it's actually a good point to stop coding for this. Continue, pick up during the next lecture. Just a second. So what we got this nice structure here. We still lack the way of actually putting the explanations back in. And we are going to continue during the next lecture. Big important parts, you know, you have this pattern, fmap, something, zip, something. That's the one thing to focus on. And another thing is that it seems that when I implement this, you know, GPA for pretty much anything at all, it's going to, you know, reduce the number of lines of code that I have to write. It's going to take the bookkeeping part, which is ugly and boring to write, away. In some cases, like the random, it's going to be really, you know, really lots of code. You know, it's going to be huge amount of tedious code to write. It's going to help me get rid of that. Okay, you had a question.
The question five-fold implementation of the multiplication.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Well, better. Yeah. Okay, let's pick up from this. Let's figure out how actually add back these animations. Okay, it's not going to be that nice, but it's going to motivate why we need more NAS later on. Okay, any questions? Anything at all? If not, then, you know, we meet again at next day and complete this.